are back with another Red House radio program for you. Welcome to all our members and casual listeners. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Henrik, and our program goes out worldwide through RedIceCreations.com, RedIceMembers.com, and also RedIceRadio.net. You can hear new programs three times per week on all kinds of fascinating topics. We, of course, love to talk about controversial and challenging issues that will make you think and hopefully open your eyes. Today, our topics are geoengineering, chemtrails, weather, warfare, and the collapse of civilization. Dane Wigington has an extensive background in solar energy. He is a former employee of Bechtel Power Corporation and was a licensed contractor in California and Arizona. His personal residence was featured in a cover article on the world's largest renewable energy magazine, Home Power. He owns a 1,600-acre wildlife preserve next to Lake Shasta in Northern California. Dane focused his efforts and engineering on the geoengineering issue when he began to lose very significant amounts of solar uptake due to whatever increasing solar obfuscation caused from the aircraft spraying. He also noted significant decline in forest health and began testing and research into the geoengineering issue about a decade ago. Dane is the lead researcher for geoengineeringwatch.org and has investigated all levels of geoengineering from chemtrails to PARP. He assisted Michael Murphy, a previous guest, with his production of What in the World Are They Spraying? And he's appeared on an extensive number of programs to explain the environmental dangers that we face on a global level. Dane Wigington, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for taking the time to be on our program today. How are you?
Good, Henry. Thank you, and appreciate your courage in addressing this dire issue that I don't know if people know about yet.
Well, exactly. It is a dire one. I rewatched your presentation again, a fairly recent one, and it's of course an ominous message that you come with, but it's very, very important, and we've certainly tried to highlight this topic in the past. Now, I thought in the beginning here we could just kind of, I guess, define some terms first. There's a lot of things flying around from geoengineering to climate engineering, weather warfare, chemtrails. Maybe you can just kind of set the groundwork a little bit for us here, and let's not assume that everyone is up to speed, and we can take some of these things from the beginning, Dane. How would you define some of these?
Your question is certainly valid, and it is confusing to people. All of these terms describe the same phenomenon, the same global atmospheric and weather modification programs. The term chemtrails, although it most accurately describes what we see, a dispersion of chemicals and metallic particles into the sky, that term, not by accident, is labeled conspiracy theory. And if people Google that term, even though it's a very descriptive term and really practically accurate, if they Google that, they come to conspiracy theory Wikipedia definitions that tend to derail people from their investigation. Also, you have NASA in the United States entering dispersed documents to their congressional people and so forth that claim chemtrails is a conspiracy. So people sometimes, if they use just that term, they hit a dead end, they give up, they quit looking. Climate engineering, geoengineering, you Google those terms, you get hard science. So although we're talking about the same things and weather warfare being one aspect of climate modification programs, so it's all the same thing. It comes down to semantics, and in this case, semantics matter. If you want people to investigate that aren't familiar with the manipulation of the Earth's climate systems, you need to give them a term that will lead them to data that will help them continue their investigation.
How far back would you say that this science goes, Dane?
We have really indisputable data that shows these programs were well underway even in the late 40s. For example, this parade of engineered snowstorms in the eastern U.S., and there's no question they're being engineered. We have snow tests to prove the engineered nucleation elements in this snow. We have patents for artificial ice nucleation for weather modification going back to 1950. So it's clear that these programs have been going on for an incredibly long period of time. We have, by the mid-60s, 1966, I found an 80-page presidential document on the NASA archives that outlined the programs as of that date, with budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars involving many federal agencies, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, Department of Interior, Department of Forestry, on and on and on, and about 12 major universities, budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars again. So these programs have been around for a very, very long time, under the radar. And the ramp-up of late, though, in the last decade and a half, these programs are inconceivably massive. And, again, that's what makes it hard for people to believe this is going on. But They've been so conditioned to not even recognize what a real cloud looks like anymore, so no matter what they do in the skies above, people seem oblivious.
Well, indeed, exactly. How long would you say that the chemtrails, that specifically, has been going? That's very, very difficult to detail and actually pin down, because I've seen some very, very old photographs that seem to indicate that there's, you know, something going on in that regard, but there's definitely a ramp up that occurs with, of course, the expansion of the commercial flight industry as well, correct?
There is, but the increase in spraying, really, although that's been used as a an out, if you will, for why we see more happening in the skies, the spraying of aerosols goes back, again, to the 40s, 50s, and various forms of cloud seeding. And so when people see these old movies, for example, or old photographs, and they see some of these trails there, chances are that was weather disbursement then also. Now, with exceptions, you have, for example, people show the World War II B-17 bombers leaving big vapor trails behind. Well, those are very crude engines, very crude. They put out a lot of particulate matter. So we would expect those old, very inefficient, very pollution-emitting engines to make a particulate trail. But now we have the high-bypass turbofan jet engine. That if we have a diagram of this, an animation, and a video to go with it on the front page of geoengineeringwatch.org, again, that being our website. And that engine by design, because 80% of the air that passes through that engine is non-combusted, and by design, that engine's almost incapable of emitting any condensation trail. So in all commercial aircraft have high-bypass turbofan jet engines, and most military tankers, not the fighter jets or anything, and those certainly could emit a condensation trail more readily. But again, most of what we see, even the shorter, bright trails that seem to dissipate, but still very bright trails, those are particulate disbursements as well. And the carriers that we see everything from military tankers, KC-10s, KC-135s, also commercial carriers have been identified from the ground, KLM, American Airlines, FedEx, so forth, and we believe we have the outline to that goes over the use of commercial carriers for the purpose of expanding these programs as well.
Now, before we go deeper into this and get more into the geoengineering bit, what actually is going on, what the purpose is, etc., there's so many components to this. How long have you been looking into these kinds of topics, Dane?
I've had my life on hold for a little over 10 years on this issue. It's not a job I wanted. I'm not an activist. I'm not politically oriented. And I never really imagined doing this. But once you really understand that this is nothing less than an all-out assault against life on Earth, that whatever perceived benefit that those carrying out these programs believe they're accomplishing, the data simply is too overwhelming, that there is no good in these programs at all. And when you see everything around you, a forest around me, that was thriving 10 years ago, is now virtually imploding. So much metal has fallen on us, it's changed 4-4 pHs 10 to 12 times toward alkaline. We know this. We have the baselines. We have the lab tests to prove the metals coming down in the rain. And quite simply, when you see the health issues happening, the respiratory effects, the full ramifications, it's rationally, you feel, I mean, the conclusion you can only come to with this is that if we don't deal with this issue, we're not going to have much to care about pretty soon, Henrik. So it's not a battle I wanted, but I've been at it for 10 years solid.
I got it. Now, let's talk a little bit more about what actually is in the trails, what form that comes down, how it dumps. Then later we can get into what you see some of the health consequences of this is, and of course then we'll get into the bigger picture. But, what kind of tests have been done and what has been found in them?
When I first came to the Pacific Northwest in search of cleaner air, grew up in smoggy Southern California as a kid and wanted to get out my whole life. So when I got here expecting clean air, I built a big off-grid home. And as I, on certain intermittent days, was losing 60-70% of my solar uptake from these grid patterns, that's how I got onto the issue to begin with. I researched the climate engineering programs, found patents, looked at the primary elements in those patents, began to test rain. And first rain test of 7 parts per billion, which I asked the hydrogeologist if I should expect that in my location. They said patently no. Subsequent rain tests over the next 5 years escalated as high as 3,450 parts per billion in a single rain test. So that's nearly a 50,000% increase. It's highly toxic rain, barium, strontium, manganese. We've just had 2 precip samples of the nucleated ice with copper and chloride also in the mix. So it's quite a vast array, and there's certainly other elements that we don't know about. If you don't know what you're looking for, it's harder to find. Now, we've had Norwegian and German researchers that have had 60 consecutive lab tests with fluoride in the rain. So
really?
There are, yes. And if, you know, I guess if we don't drink it in the water, they'll just put it in
rain
the airport.
Rain on us instead, huh? Yeah.
Exactly. But also there are weather mod applications for fluoride. That's fluoride, if moisture is aerosolized, which tends to migrate the moisture, keep it from falling, and then later exposed to certain RF frequencies like that we would expect with the HARP facilities, those particulates can coagulate, come back together, and cause precipitation to fall again. So those that are orchestrating these programs don't seem to have any regard for the consequences. They simply, the atmosphere is a giant physics lab for them, so they do whatever they want because there's no one to tell them they can't.
What are some of the other health consequences of this that we're seeing? I mean, we have so many issues on that front all over the world, and just, you know, ramping up of things from, you know, cancer to diabetes, all kinds of things. You know, we have Alzheimer's. I mean, that's certainly connected with a lot of the heavy metals as well. But what do you see? What kind of connections are you making here?
Well, certainly all the above, everything you mentioned. Now, according to researchers from Stanford, I was at the university with a bioscientist from Stanford that says their data now shows conclusively that the aluminum exposure has a direct connection with type 2 diabetes and obesity. And we see also now recent reports that implicate aluminum with gluten intolerance. And that's a huge health issue as well. So if we look at all the ramifications of these metals individually, the array of health issues they cause is almost endless. And then when we combine these metals, you have synergistic toxicity that occurs by the combination, which makes the metals exponentially more lethal. And we were given tests on the effects of combining aluminum and mercury with lab rats. Enough aluminum to kill 1 in 100 lab rats, combined with enough mercury to kill 1 in 100 lab rats, all the lab rats die. Toxicities increase 10,000%. So there's no study, quite simply, there's no study on the full ramification of these particulates. And interestingly enough, in the U.S., there's very little study of the health implications of nanoparticulates, which are incredibly harmful to the human organism, period. Other countries study it more than us, but in the U.S., there seems to be a very well-orchestrated effort to hide the fallout from these programs, and right down to the air testing of PM 2.5, 2.5 microns, the best you're going to get. These particulates are exponentially smaller. They go virtually under the radar, even though there's a mountain of this stuff falling on us. So we're in quite a dark corner right now, and again, that's why I focused on this issue. There's a lot of challenges facing the human race, certainly, but if we continue to ingest this stuff and it's affecting our cognitive function, our health, at some point, and that point is probably much nearer than people want to think, we won't face any challenge. We won't be able to rise to anything we face. So this is the emergency that must be dealt with.
Well, and many of these are accumulative as well in the body. So, you know, we're talking about years of you know, being subjected to this and without any active plan to detox or try to, you know, drag these out of the body with chlorella or some of the other things that are, you know, capable of helping and aiding in that process, it certainly is going to go downhill from here. Do you think we should assume that all of the increases of a lot of these particulates and material and metal, heavy metals and everything else comes from the aerosol alone, or is it a combination of things?
Well, certainly anthropogenic activity has put a lot of things into the air. There's no question about that. Depending on the area you live in, and what sort of industrial activity there may be around, there's a lot of sources of atmospheric particulate pollution. But that being said, mathematically, when you have internationally recognized geoengineers like David Keith stating on the record their intended goal of 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates in the atmosphere annually, that's a tremendous amount of material. I think mathematically that equates to something like 600 plus flights a day, every day, with 100 ton payloads, 24/7, 365 days a year. That's a tremendous amount of material. And all the particulate pollution that we've seen to date, even up till about 2002, the soil pH values here in the Pacific Northwest where I live had remained relatively intact, about 5.6, 5.4, 5.6. Now we're seeing pH values in the same locations at 6.6, 6.8. So something profound has happened in the last 10 plus years, and it's a direct correlation with the solar obscuration we see, the blocking of the sun, which is the expressed goal of climate engineering. So it's really a 2 plus 2 equals 4 equation, and I think although there's, yes, a lot of sources of atmospheric pollution, mathematically there appears to be nothing that really compares with the climate engineering. We see the health issues correlate directly with that pH change in the soils. We see from 2005 to 2010 in the continental U.S., respiratory mortality went from 8th on the list of mortality to 3rd in that 5-year period. That should be headlines everywhere.
Yeah.
Not a word.
It's funny. I mean, I always make this comparison, but just consider some of the other things that happened out there and the response that we see politically. For example, you know, school shootings or, you know, even that, to the extent 9/11, and you compare the amounts of death from that to some of these other things that occur, and you realize that, whoa, something is really wrong here when it comes to how the media are treating some of these subjects, you know, and looking at statistics and everything else.
So true. So true. And at this point, what the media is focusing on is, I mean, they grab a drama out of a hat, focus on it for a week at a time while the house is literally burning down. And people think that they can stay in their comfort zone bubble, but I would argue they will not have that option for much longer, that we are literally faced with challenges that will change the entire paradigm of reality that we know, and people will simply have no choice but to be forced awake, period.
So let's cover why these particulates, materials, compounds, what have you, actually is doing in the air and what the chemtrail program, the spraying program, actually how that connects with the bigger issue of geoengineering. How does this connect and what are these materials doing in the air?
There's a lot of different layers to this situation, and the components all go together. We have the atmospheric spraying can accomplish a number of things that seem to correlate with the patents that we see. Again, SRM, which is solar radiation management by the use of stratospheric aerosol injection, SAI. And so the goal with those patents is to put more or less a cocoon of these toxic metals around the planet to deflect a certain percentage of the sun's incoming solar energy. Now, in doing so, you're making the atmosphere more conductive. You're ionizing the atmosphere. So now we have another component to the global climate weather modification programs, which is HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. If many have heard the term HARP, they don't know what the acronym means. The acronym, the verbiage doesn't seem to fit the use of the installation. These are giant ground-based radio frequency transmitters that heat the ionosphere. It's an electrically charged layer of the atmosphere. And these installations, in the case of HARP, which is one of the most powerful, 3 billion watts of power transmitted into the ionosphere, can heat the ionosphere to tens of thousands of degrees over huge areas, hundreds of square miles. This can create high and low pressure zones. This can create the jet stream. And indeed, we see a jet stream that is so horribly contorted today that you have meteorologists around the globe. They're scratching their heads, can't figure out how these jet stream patterns can be. And so, you know, apparently completely blind to what so many other people know, laymen even, and they're, of course, whether they're threatened, whether they're conditioned to not acknowledge this reality, or whether they're simply lying, we can't say. But the fact is that the various components of weather modification are completely derailing the Earth's natural weather systems, and now we see weather disseminating agencies like Weather Channel, Weather Central, and so forth, NOAA, that are simply towing the line, trying to make, for the power structure, towing the line for the people behind the geoengineering to try to make the completely unnatural appear natural. And the public, largely to this point, has bought it. But the weather is derailing so rapidly now that even those that have wanted to remain in a bit of a denial state, comatose state, are starting to be forced awake because the climate's just simply too off the rails. You have temperature swings of 60, 70 degrees in a single day, and that's simply historically not natural. And the jet stream behavior is so completely unprecedented that it's starting to wake some people up, Henrik.
What is this going to create, do you think? And is the situation under control it seems like it's, to a certain degree, okay, it's basically a live experiment running. They really might not know exactly what is going on or how the patterns of the weather with the energy input and output and everything else, how that's going to react depending on what they're doing. So how much in control are they actually at this stage, do you think?
I think, based on all available data, not at all. They have no idea the ramifications, nor do they seem to care. And we see examples of this. If we look at, one can look at the nuclear detonations, where they weren't really quite sure what would happen. But they did it anyway, because there was no one to stop them. And we look at Project Starfish, where they detonated hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere, with really no idea what would happen. But because the public doesn't know, and there's no one to stop these people, they do whatever they want. And they tend to approach things at face value. It's the pharmaceutical method for planet Earth, where it's a very tunnel-visioned outlook. They'll apply one thing for one desired result, causing a chain reaction of results that they then apply other things, causing further chain reactions of results. And now what we have is literally weather whack-a-mole, where it appears they're simply trying to put fires out that they're starting at the same time, and then trying to use gas to put them out. So although geoengineering can and does create incredibly large regional cooling, as we see in the eastern U.S., I mean, those storms are completely engineered. We have, again, tests of the material falling on the ground. We see the jet stream movement. And they're very shallow layers of cold. People should keep that in mind. If you talk to frequent flyers in some of those areas, they come up off the deck, and 1,500 feet up, the temperature jumps up 20, 30 degrees. And this is simply historically wrong. It's a stratification of the atmosphere. The atmosphere is layered now. It doesn't mix properly. The ocean's starting to stratify as well. This is hugely problematic. So they can create these huge cooling events that make somebody on the ground think that we're entering into, you know, some cooling period, when the truth is very far from that conclusion. So and at the same time, they're creating these ground-level cooling events, they're worsening the overall warming. So are they in control? I would say absolutely not. Are they panicked at this point? I think they are. They've triggered climate feedback mechanisms that cannot be turned off. They've shredded the ozone layer. The ozone layer is absolutely in tatters. And we have proof of this. We're metering UV. You have UVA, UVB, and UVC. 95% of what hits the surface should be UVA. This is what we're told by all major agencies. No more than 5% UVB. We're seeing 60% UVB now, the more harmful band. We're even picking up UVC, which we're told stops 100,000 feet up in the atmosphere. So the UVB right now is minimally 1,200% higher than we're being told. So we really can only attribute the decimation of the ozone layer primarily to the climate engineering, because even though they stopped CFCs in the 80s, now we have a massive northern hemisphere ozone hole. What was the cause of that? We know the particulates in the atmosphere caused this. We know they're spraying. This equation is really quite straightforward for anybody who looks at it, and the ramifications are truly dire.
We have a weakening of the magnetic field at the same time going on, something that has been, I think, going on for the last, you know, 10, 20 years or so. That has to add to this as well, on top of it, with everything that we're doing, and then you have incoming, you know, radiation from the sun, cosmic radiation and everything else. Is that somehow playing into this, do you think, or is that just a different side effect, but it gives us kind of a, it just adds on to the problem?
Well, you bring up a very important point, and when you have so many things pulling at the system, it's, I believe, impossible to decipher all the elements affecting it. And when we have, for example, in the case of nuclear detonations, over 2,000 detonations, many of them subterranean, we have Project Starfish that was detonated in the magnetosphere, and we have these ionosphere heaters, which are also beaming this tremendously powerful radio frequency back down into the surface of the Earth. What effect might all these have on the magnetic field now? And it has weakened about 10 to 15%. That is a problem. It's absolutely a problem. Now we have a radically diminished ozone layer. What happens now if we have a major CME, a coronal mass ejection, solar flare, perhaps a Kerrigan event?
Yeah.
Grids shut down around the globe. Now we have nuclear plants unable to cool themselves all over, and that's probably the end of the road. So the paradox here is that it's the sort of thing we see in mainstream medicine, where the more they apply their programs, the more they have to apply their programs to really cover the damage their programs did in the first place.
Oh boy, that's never a good never good way of going about things. So what you've said so far is almost like, okay, they've opened up Pandora's box and now they're rushing to try to close it again, kind of.
To some degree, again, right now I think that I believe they entered these programs believing, as psychotic people do, that they could continue this without consequence, because they put so much effort into conditioning the population to accept this as natural. From, even as I put in my presentations last, they put these into kids' animated films, and it's everywhere, so that it starts to just become normal for people, and they accept this. And I truly believe that they felt they could manipulate the Earth's climate systems for an indefinite period of time, and they now know that that is not going to happen. And it's the game is changing by the day, and I believe now the power structure's hand is being forced, if you will, that they are having to ramp up their time frames for whatever agendas they've had. And I think even events that would seem disconnected, for example, what's happening in Ukraine right now,
mm-hmm.
and the sort of toppling of nations that our country is engaged in, and although our media paints a very different picture, we see are certainly the Western powers' hand in all this disruption with other countries. And I think that they're really speeding up their agendas, because as the curtain gets pulled back, and as people with this one issue with geoengineering, as the critical mass of population realizes what has happened, that their health has been permanently compromised, in many cases, kids with autism, people with Alzheimer's, so forth, that there will be a fury and a panic in society that will be unstoppable. And I think the power structure knows this. They're preparing for it. We have the 2.2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point that's been ordered. You know, people should be clearly alarmed as hell about that. And I think a lot of preparations are being made, Heinrich. I think they're being made as fast as the power structure can make them. In the meantime, much of the American public still sleeps.
Yeah, I want to ask you more about the population question and the power structure and what is going on there, considering the struggle that we've seen there. But just another thing here first before we proceed here. Elizabeth posted on redicecreations.com just a few days ago now, plans by scientists to wipe out Earth's Van Allen belt with radio wave technology. And it sounds like a lunatic idea, of course, of a team of mad scientists, but there are actually reported that some of the physicists are proposing to wipe it out, yet we don't even fully understand it yet. But these kinds of things are flying around as well. Did you catch this particular story?
I didn't see that particular story, but there is another aspect of the climate modification that would plug into that to some degree. If right now there's Project Lucy and Project Alamo, both of which I think are well underway. And that is with the methane that's entering the atmosphere right now and saturating the upper atmosphere. These two projects, these are acronyms to describe a program of trying to nuke the atmosphere with opposing radio frequencies to try to degrade the methane before it saturates the atmosphere so much that we're in a Venus syndrome runaway greenhouse event. So they don't know the consequences of that either, and I don't know if there's a correlation between what you mentioned and Project Lucy or Project Alamo. There may be. But again, it's this downward spiral where they never really understand the consequences of what they do, and as they fall deeper into the hole, they just keep digging.
Exactly. We still don't know if the Van Allen belt, if you will, is there to keep something from coming in or from something of going out. There's a couple of different ways of looking at that. Nonetheless, it's a crazy, psychotic idea of trying to meddle with something that we don't even understand yet. And it's obvious that we have cosmic radiation out there. But yeah, we'll see how far they go with this. Now, let's just talk about the methane thing a little bit more, because you got into that and it's a pretty interesting thing. What is the latest on that? Where is this? This is something that's stored in the ice under Siberia and the Arctic primarily, is that correct?
The largest reservoirs appear to be in the Arctic, but there's methane hydrate deposits all over the planet. And for those that have watched the Bermuda Triangle situation and the ship sinkings and the aircraft downings there, that appears to be methane hydrate release. So as these frozen deposits on the seafloor, the temperatures are warmed even slightly, those deposits can release, and generally whole fields can release at once. So in the case of the ship sinkings, as you have a field of methane hydrate release, it aerates the water like a bottle of champagne. The ships have no buoyancy and they go down. And it was actually proven that methane, I saw the demonstrations, History Channel actually did this. They showed a World War II propeller engines, if they exposed methane to those engines, it killed the engine instantly. So it would fit that these fighter pilots, you know, five at a time go down from this methane. So methane's been releasing around the globe for a long time. But the reservoirs in the Arctic right now are massive. And the potential for them to end life on Earth many times over is absolutely there. In the case of the reservoir in the East Siberian Shelf, it's thought that there may be as much as 10,000 gigatons of methane in that deposit. Because methane is so potent of a greenhouse gas, CH4 is much more potent than CH2, or CO2, excuse me, then you have methane being 100 times more potent than CO2 over a 10-year time horizon. So if 50 gigatons of that 10,000 releases, that could be as much as a 400% increase on the total greenhouse equivalent we have, and that's one half of 1% of that one reservoir. So again, the potential for this methane release to end life on our planet is very real and very immediate. And the geoengineering, how does this connect with geoengineering, people ask me. Anthropogenic activity has certainly caused horrific damage to the planet. I know a lot of people don't want to believe that, but that's just simply the hard facts of it. Geoengineering being the biggest single factor. So geoengineering and the jet stream manipulation with HARP that we went over, that alters upper level wind currents, which alters ocean currents, which is now pumping warm water straight into the Arctic. Now we have the shredded ozone layer. So we have more thermal energy hitting the ice, penetrating deeper into the seafloor. So the methane's releasing, and all these loops they're positive feedback loops. They're feeding on each other. Guy McPherson, very outspoken and very honorable man from UC Arizona. He's Professor Emeritus there. He's outlined 29 feedback loops, in fact, that are already triggered. So we're in a runaway event probably right now. And geoengineering is throwing gas on the fire overall. They're attempting to hide it. And again, back to the Corexit oil spill in the Gulf, which, you know, they use Corexit there to try to hide the oil spill there. Didn't care about making the situation better. They just wanted to hide it. And at this point, geoengineering, in addition to the military strategic purposes and the control it gives the governments over their own populations by creating drought, famine, whatever, it also appears that they are simply trying to hide the severity of the planetary meltdown as long as they can.
Now, if we look at this historically and look at the methane issue as well, because obviously then it's stored or like locked in with the aid of the ice, has there been spikes of methane in the past during, for example, the medieval warm period? Have there been other releases of this, and have we found any correlation to how the biosphere has reacted to that?
Yes, but the smaller bumps in the road, like the medieval warming, attributed to other causes. The best correlation we have with methane mass expulsion would be the PETM event, the Paleocene Eocene thermal maximum 55 million years ago, methane mass expulsion, global mass extinction, and that rendered huge sections of the planet uninhabitable. In fact, from about 30 degrees south to 30 degrees north was felt, based on paleo data, to be a dead zone where you had terrestrial temperatures of 140 plus, ocean temperatures 105 plus, nothing lived. And the equilibrium periods after that event were 10, 20 million years, something on that order. So this is not a small issue. And the methane reservoirs now releasing are thought to be larger than what happened during the PETM event. Now, that doesn't mean that it will necessarily end up there or worse. We don't know. We simply don't know. We're in uncharted territory. But one thing is certain based on the data, I believe, that if we don't let the planet respond on its own, we have no chance. And again, the epitome of insanity, I don't think you'd have to talk to anybody with a lot of education or even a very mature person. You could talk to a 10-year-old kid that would know flying thousands of jets around the sky, dumping toxic metals and chemicals into the atmosphere, can't do anything but harm.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward.
Now, one thing that seems to be certain, though, is that we're definitely entering into a period of extremes, and we're experiencing kind of a lot of it at the same time. I think one of the biggest issues that kind of proves this is what's happening in the United States at the moment with a drought and really warm weather on the West Coast, right? And then really cold with this polar vortex thing pushing down into the East Coast. And it's like it's dividing the United States in half almost. How is that possible? What's happening there?
It's not possible without climate engineering. And in fact, I'm posting 4 NOAA maps in an article I should have out tomorrow that show exactly the scenario you just outlined. It's meteorologically speaking, it's simply hard to believe that such a map could be pinned, let alone be real. But that's what you have. And so people on the East Coast, and there's highly populated areas there, so there's a lot of people that are being influenced by this colder weather that think, well, there's extremes in every direction. But the cold extremes, I would argue, and I believe data supports completely, are being engineered from top to bottom. We know that the snow is being nucleated. We know that for a fact. And it doesn't mean there's not natural snow in places, but we know that storms are heavily nucleated. We have lab tests to prove it. So at this point, whether the western U.S. is a climate sacrifice zone, being that as they're keeping this dome of high pressure over the west, it's diverted the jet stream up through Alaska, and then it pinwheels in a clockwise motion back down, carrying cool air with it, and they're nucleating that moisture. So they pick up moisture from the Pacific, they pump it up through Alaska. Alaska, by the way, just had its warmest January on record. Now, this is something that media simply doesn't cover. Why? Because they're no longer talking about global warming. They simply want to hide it. So Alaska just had its warmest January on record, and that air then pumps down, but they're able to cool off parts of the lower 48 with heavy nucleation. And California, again, might be a climate sacrifice zone. But it appears other agendas are being carried out with the drought in California. For example, there's a quest by the feds to lock down water rights, lock down control over people's ability to sustain themselves here with agricultural land. You have multinational corporations that seem to be snapping up the land of the private farmer that can't support himself with no water anymore. And we saw similar circumstances happen in Australia where huge regions were droughted out so bad from the climate engineering programs, and the whole region sold for pennies on the dollar, whole towns, and big multinational ag bought it up. Now the rain's falling. In Africa, over previous decades, these countries that have been droughted out again and again that they attribute to climate change, we believe geoengineering is the more likely scenario because the atmosphere carries 7% more moisture for every degree of warming. It should be raining more, not less. And the term climate change, when did they implement that term? They implemented it in 99, approximately, 98, 99. When the geoengineering programs were really unleashed on a much larger scale. So they had to have a term that conditioned people to think that these gargantuan swings in weather from day to day were somehow part of what was naturally unfolding. Couldn't be further from the truth. So people have been conditioned again and again and again where without these climate engineering programs and the short-term cooling events they cause, the warming would be much more protracted. And I believe we're very close to them not being able to manipulate people's perception this way. The warming, I think, will manifest itself so much soon that there'll be no debate about this. And I hope that people from every camp realize that whatever their feelings on the climate overall, that we've all been a part of a grand and lethal experiment that has truly decimated not just our health, but the ability for the planet to support life. And that if we care about anything, we must deal with this issue.
Now, there are a number of things there that I want to return to a little bit later. Nucleated snow, you brought up, snow falling in 50-degree Fahrenheit temperatures, very weird things happening. And of course, I want to get more to your overall, idea there as well, that it actually is getting warmer and why they're doing it, to seem cooler. But we have to touch upon the who a little bit here before we start running up for the first segment here, and that has to do with the divisions, how you see it on the geopolitical chess board, if you will. We have a number of countries, of course, involved in geoengineering: the United States, European Union, Russia, China, possibly India. There might be some other ones as well that are looking into it, whatnot. Is there divisions here, infighting, or people? Is this weather warfare? How this is a very difficult question, of course, very difficult to know because we see. We don't know if we've seen the experimentation of a country on its own, citizens or that country, or if they're trying to do it in other countries, etc. But how do you go about kind of trying to deconstruct what's going on with the power struggle between different countries and areas here?
I think we see U.S. and the NATO countries on one side of the fence, China and Russia on the other. They're the major players. other countries are probably forced to go along. And we've seen some interesting events. For example, some contacts we have in Mexico indicated that Mexico had pushed back, didn't want this happening in their airspace. And there seemed to have been a cessation of the spraying over Mexico for a time. And then the swine flu outbreak happened, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately after, the spraying ensued. So was that all connected? Perhaps. And we saw similar circumstances in Ireland, where those are the only two countries who really had any data that seemed credible at all, that they were pushing back against these programs. Then Ireland was financially crushed. So this is the gravity of these programs cannot be overstated. This is the biggest hammer of all. And even Snowden, did you happen to see the Snowden release that, although some try to discredit it, I feel it was valid, relating to geoengineering? Did you
mm-hmm.
see that?
Yeah, I did.
And I feel that release was credible, and that the document Snowden referred to said exactly what we would expect a government document of that nature to state, that if not for these programs, the climate system would fly apart within a year. And they went on to make other statements. And they also called this the crown jewel of the U.S. defense system.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's really the ultimate weapon, because you can win a war without firing a shot. So, and from the perspective of those in power who feel they have to control everything, yes, it's called double collapse scenario. From their perspective, if you stop geoengineering once you start, this is what they try to sell us also, that the climate backlash would be horrific. And that's correct. When you keep a lid on a boiling kettle and you pop it off, there can be a splash. But that's the only choice. No matter how violent the Earth's response, it's trying to cool itself. It's trying to right itself. It's trying to reach equilibrium. And anything but allowing it to do that is pure folly, especially when we're talking about killing the ecosystem. And these particulates are virtually killing the boreal forests. They're toxifying oceans, sea life, marine life. There was a study of whales in 2010, 1,000 whales from around the globe that had, according to the report, and I quote directly, jaw-dropping levels of aluminum in these whales. There's nowhere you can hide from this, and our boreal forests are virtually imploding. Aluminum, effective bioavailable aluminum on organisms like trees is fairly well documented. They shut down nutrient uptake to avoid this toxin. It affects their DNA. So instead of boreal forests thriving from increased rainfall and more acidity in the rain, they're imploding. The ecosystem is imploding. So now the forests, instead of being carbon sinks, they're carbon sources.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, you know, from top to bottom, these programs are absolutely derailing every natural response mechanism on the planet.
So this is an arms race of sorts. This is like the nuclear weapons program. It is going to go ahead. They will not back down to try to, you know, understand it and of course control it and ultimately, you know, gain over who they, whatever, at whatever time considered to be the enemy, of course. But is there any, do you think that there is any point here that there is an agreeance among the power elite? I mean, I've been, the higher up you get on the pyramid of you know, power, if you will, it seems to be more aligned, and the dialectic battle between different divisions seems to be more for the lower levels. So I guess in a long kind of roundabout way, is there, for example, on the depopulation point an agreement, do you think, in terms of the difference of the power states that are exercising the geoengineering?
That's a great question, and I think there's multiple facets to it, in that, yes, I think there is agreement at the top with certain issues. I mean, the planet can't support the population that's here. That's already apparent. And I think there's been certainly a collaboration between governments on this. I found photos of the U.S. or the Soviet weather modification scientists touring the U.S. in 1968, height of the Cold War, touring the U.S. weather modification facilities. Clearly collaboration at the height of the Cold War. But now, we just had last fall, when the IPCC report came out, largest scientific panel in human history, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Russia asked them to address geoengineering. There wasn't going to be a single word about geoengineering in that report, but Russia asked them to. So is it possible now that Russia is having second thoughts about these programs? And we see a tremendous lashing out at Russia right now.
Yeah, certainly.
Our country,
yeah.
Correct? So is it possible that there's a fraying in the power structure, that the totality of what's unfolding here is starting to at least appear to certain people? And I think at that point, the fact that Putin asked them to address this issue is well worth note, and it's a sign of sanity that we do not see coming from our government. And are the events in Kiev related to this? Perhaps. So it's at this point, there's enough data to know, and there's some recent science study that indicates clearly, due to simply the disruption of the hydrological cycle alone, not only do we know now that geoengineering is not working, we know it can't work. It cannot work. So, but when they're completely invested in this, and when the consequences of this word getting out are considered, they will try to hide it as long as they can, because you have a population that I believe would want to hunt down anyone and everyone involved in these programs if they really knew. And I think that they will hide it to the last minute. But if we can reach critical mass and get this out in the open, I think our paradigm will take a big turn in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, Putin doesn't seem to be as easily controlled and willing to play ball as the others, at least. Again, it's very difficult to kind of determine what actually is going on and who's pulling the strings. But Russia has done a lot of measures in the last 10, 15 years, really, that suggest that they want to remain more sovereign, shall we say.
I agree. And when you see John Kerry stand up and say that no country has the right to interfere with another country's sovereign affairs, how deep can the hypocrisy go?
Oh, my God. It's right when we do it and when the NATO intervene and the quote-unquote allied or whatever, but when anyone else does it, Russia in that case, it's just wrong, right? That's the logic we're expected to accept here.
I don't have the words for watching him. You know, I can hardly stand to look at him, you know. But I think the world is waking up to this quite rapidly, and if the dollar is lost as the global reserve currency, that's going to change the game immediately as well. But right now, the climate unraveling alone, I believe, can't be hidden much longer, and it's just a race to the intersection of whether we get word out in time or whether they drop another shoe on us. Because I don't know what, at this point, the power structure being more cornered every day, what are they capable of? What will they do? And I think that's a grave question.
Well, exactly, and that could be a dangerous process as well, as you corner any, well, animal in that regard, I guess. It's going to potentially lash out at you. That might be what we're seeing here. But let's take a short break here, Dane. We're going to pick up just very shortly here in the second hour, and continue. But give us your website again, and please go ahead and mention some of the things that you have there for newcomers to the website. If you do have any, I think you're plugging a couple of DVDs on the website as well, where people can find out more and everything else. So please go ahead and mention all of that.
Yeah, geoengineeringwatch.org is our website. Our goal is to simply provide the tools necessary to get the word out to others. There's various levels of introduction to people. There's a film called Look Up, and that's a separate site. It's not directly connected with me. It's called SkyderAlert.com. Very good site for introduction to people. And then we also have, for example, my PowerPoint presentations for people that can take a little harsher reality. That can be used as a tool as well, sometimes after people already understand this is going on. So we try to provide every level of introduction to people so that they can help us to share the word, because we desperately need to get this out into the open quick.
Right. Geoengineeringwatch.org. That's the website. Head on over there. Check it out. Take a good look around. There's a big big archive, a lot of stories and videos and everything else, so you'll be busy for quite some time there. So good stuff. All right. Well, we'll take a short break right here. Stay with us, Dane. We'll be right back with more. is up right after the break with Dane Wigington as we proceed at redicemembers.com, our second hour for our subscribers, where we have all our full programs. Okay, we'll continue to talk about the recent cold snaps, specifically in the U.S., and Dane argues that this has been artificially created, and this has basically created an imbalance in the global weather patterns. We also talk about the International Thermonuclear Experiment Reactor, the ITER, a new crazy experiment by scientists to create a star in a magnetic bottle. To catch the rest, sign up if you're not yet a member and dive into the deep end of the information pool. We do cover a lot of topics, and I'm sure we'll have a lot that will pique your interest. Take a look around at redicemembers.com. All right, we'll talk to you on the other side of the break. Thank you for staying with us, for listening. And we'll be right back.